Feeling a little run down by the discourse in Rider fandom? Looking for something fresh to put that bounce in your step and a bee in your bonnet? Well, look no further than the Uncommon Cast RX. Active ingredients. Gomez Q.
Because everything I hate, I do say it should be better, and it would be nice if I don't just say
Grim Help.
Kiwi!
Illustrator Play.
Fire.
MC Pez.
I am the child of the sun of my grandpa.
Yuzov.
The rage! The rage!
Professor What?
The venom of the seas.
Side effects may include ascites, show a fever, helper robotophobia, and an English slope. This is the cure for the Kamen Rider show. Dose as needed.
So we are talking about Kamen Rider G. This is, I think, going to be possibly a heated discussion. I don't know how much more carefully I can couch that.
Oh, it's mulled wine.
Okay. I'm not sure I understood that.
You guys not have mulled wine?
Not that I'm aware of.
All right, well, we're having you around. Get on over here. But hey, don't let me hijack the show.
Okay.
In the winter, we will heat wine with spices in, and then warm our cold fingers.
Yeah.
Really? You heat wine?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Wow, you
I think it's like
strange.
A hangover from medieval times when the wine was not so good.
Hmm. Yeah, there's a hot booze.
But then again.
Named after me, in fact.
Wow.
Oh, yeah.
Fergus lover?
No!
Some plus is so heated as well.
Yeah.
So I guess it's a world over thing. If your booze is not so good, just warm it up.
Mm-hmm. You guys know we like warm beer, right?
Yeah, I've heard that's not really true.
it's not as much of a thing as people make it out to be, for sure.
I heard that you two don't even drink. Can't believe that.
Not really.
Not, like, on purpose.
We get high on life, man.
I don't think any of us identifies as, like, teetotal or whatever, but... I can drink, but it's kind of boring, to be honest. That's the conclusion I've come to, you know. Oh,
that's interesting.
I'm 28, I've been to a college, I've got other interests now, you know. That's...
Oh, okay, well, that's fine. Nigerian, you're too, you're not, you can't buy alcohol, can you?
Who? Nigerian, who's this?
Our new, host-panelist, individual joining the show to share their, expressions and, I don't know, there's going to be possibly a little interview that you did with Claire attached to this, but I guess say hi to everybody. he comes in fat Albert forms and non-fat Albert forms, by the way. So,
no, folks, it's not Colton. It's a new funny American.
Yeah.
He's the baby.
Yes, we have more than one in this country.
He's no baby. He's an Okie. And that is a word that I learned.
Yes, that is the thing that I am.
Thank you. It's important, you know.
I'm unfamiliar. Please educate me.
Well, I know what... Oh, wow, that's amazing. You're in America land.
Yeah, I'm in America land.
Yeah, we're in the colonies.
You don't know what an Okie is?
I do not know what an Okie is.
Go on, guess. Guess what an Okie is. Go on.
Somebody from Oklahoma?
Yes!
Thank you.
Yep.
All right. I'm really bad with geography, though, so that could explain it.
Well, you know where California is?
Oh, well, that's because I lived there.
Yeah. Oklahoma's not there.
No, we're in the middle.
Yeah, it's in the middle, right? Yeah.
About in the exact middle. Just go a little below Kansas, and then, yeah.
I like Kansas. Good band. Anyway, so...
I think America might be too complex for one conversation. Let's do Britain next time. It's much smaller.
Oh, okay. But you guys have like weird names like Ham Fist and things like that.
My favorite He-Man character.
Yes, I have spent many weekends in Ham Fist. is that real?
I think it could be real. I was born near Wyre Piddle and Feckenham. I did grow up in Feckenham.
Drive through Weedon a lot.
Yeah, Weedon. Good one.
See, the fact that I don't know if you guys are joking or not, and I could have actually not made up Ham Fist just goes to show how crazy it is over there.
Those are all legit.
We live quite near Drugs End.
Drugs End, yeah.
Was it Drinks End, I think, as well?
Drugs and Drink right next to each other.
One is at the end, so.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, we're safe.
Mm-hmm. I guess so. Wow. Okay. Well, I'm not going to move that or anything, so I'm just going to apologize. Mm-hmm. Sorry, everybody. I didn't mean to throw all this crazy stuff in the beginning, but, yeah, we've got a new attitude. We're starting to, change things and modify a little more, so hopefully you enjoy them very much. But here we go. We're getting into this deep discussion about Kamen Rider G, supposedly. Is G a real writer? That's the question that we want to explore, and yes. We're going to go off into some different areas. I guess,
bye,
yeah.
Everybody.
Discussion over. I solved it.
Okay. I also say yes. Todd, what do you say?
I say, come on, we've only been on the air like 10 minutes. Let's flesh this out a little.
You go shallow, then deep.
Okay. Now, I think G might be, like, the realest writer.
And, Nedge, what about you?
I'm a little undecided.
Well, at least we're almost balanced. would a more useful question be, because this is a thing that you have to do when you think critically about stuff, define your terms. What is a writer to us?
Yeah, that's a good question. I guess let's go in reverse order, Nedge. Why don't you go first?
Oh, okay. Put me on the spot. All right.
Yeah.
All right. What is a writer? To me, I think the good benchmark for that would be Takashi Hongo.
Better, can you?
Stop. As you mean to go on.
Yeah.
Yeah. A heroic person, someone who fights for justice, despite their own problems, like being a cyborg and not being able to like hug people without being really careful, that kind of thing.
So is it maybe not just in spite of his sort of curse, but because of it, like he made a conscious decision to use that evil body for good?
Exactly.
Right. Yeah, I think I'd agree with that. That's something that comes up in G, I think. I really love, I'm kind of skipping ahead here, the line when he actually engages in, like, the final battle and he says, "Taste my mix of evil and justice flavors."
Yeah.
Like, that's perfect. That should sum up all of Kamen Rider.
That
idea of being created by evil, but choosing good.
Plus, flavors.
Yes, love food.
I mean, it is my pet thing, but it is always there.
I don't know. Yeah.
And that he is wine-themed is so perfect.
But I guess
it hits on...
I've kind of ruined the order there. I mean, Matt, like, what is a Kamen Rider?
I would pretty much agree. I mean, I'm not sure what else there is to say, and I know people could probably argue and try to add different things to that, but, like... That's really, to me, the core, that this person uses what happened to them and rises above it and uses every resource at their disposal, including their, body that's been forged as a weapon and their motorcycle.
Okay.
To destroy evil. And, like, especially, like, it's so... And I'm also skipping ahead here. Like, I feel like it's so crystallized in G because, like, it's just this compact 15-minute story, and you get all the important beats about the Shade organization and him being evil and then turning away from that because of what the memory of. Did he actually taste the wine and that's what got him going, or was it just his girlfriend talking to him about it?
He definitely smelled it.
I think he tasted the wine.
Okay, sure.
But yeah, as a proper wine taster would, he had a good sniff first.
Yeah, but I think bikes is an interesting point. I mean, maybe I'm showing my age, but I miss the bikes, and I miss the loneliness. That's something I've always associated with Kamen Rider. It's a lonely existence. Mm.
There was a much greater proportion of cool bike stuff to non-cool, no bike stuff than in the many recent series. Didn't it seem longer than 15 minutes to you?
Yeah, I kind of
did. To me, it did. I felt like it lasted a satisfying amount of time. It felt longer than recent Gaim episodes have felt. Because I think I mentioned before, they felt very fast. They felt very hasty and transitory.
Well, a lot happened.
But this 15 minutes, that's nothing. That's amazing.
Yeah, it's kind of shocking that it went at this breakneck pace, but it was just, like you said, so satisfying overall. I guess something... I guess the reason for that would be the density that it had in the story and the action. And just like, in 44 seconds, it set up the evil organization being counter-terrorist and then morphing in, like, being a legitimate force for good in its inception and then morphing into something awful and oppressive and, like, hurting people for the sake of that. And I also kind of feel like that's something important to, like, a writer's story as well.
But was Shade good at first? I don't remember.
Yeah, they were, well, it's almost exactly the same as the original Ishinomori depiction of Shocker. They were a government organization set up with good intentions.
Shocker was?
Yeah, in the manga. Actually, it's revealed right towards the end that Shocker is actually the Japanese government, essentially.
It's a legitimate part of the government. And, like, they go after young people and interview them and say, like, hey, how would you like a career... where you're making things better for the world and, yeah, like, yay, Japan.
Manga Shocker was created out of an attempt to, what was it, like, to ID and catalog information on every citizen, on all Japanese citizens. And it eventually turned into this, you know, human modification project, which I think is, well, it's obviously so much stronger than what we got in the original show. That's not really to discredit the show, but I think...
Yeah, it's a great show.
I love that G brings that back, though, that idea. Because obviously the show didn't do it because that's kind of a... It's a risky statement to make, you know. Yeah. And TV has stricter censorship about that sort of thing. But Ishinomori was definitely anti-Japanese government. That is obvious in all of his stuff.
Now I kind of have this hilarious image of the great leader working a desk job.
Yeah. Well, in the manga, there's no great leader. The leader is a government computer. Big machine. He's a sentient computer that was created to catalog information on Japanese citizens. And he's decided, machine. Well, I'm in charge now.
I remember the construct of Big Machine is actually kind of shaped like Ambassador Hell.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, the design is very close.
I'm going to have to reread the manga because I read it and I was like, I felt like I was deeply involved, but And I feel like what you're saying is correct, Todd, but I just don't remember it quite that way.
There is a line. Big Machine has an amazing line. If you want to blame someone for what Shocker has done, blame the government you elected. You would not get that in the TV. You wouldn't get it on TV now.
I do that every day.
Get it in the killing.
Yeah, exactly. It's crazy. But to go back to the intro, sorry, really quick, I am a big fan of intros. It was something I really got into studying at college, the idea of an opening hook. And G's opening is so strong. And I know you could argue that just they're trying to fit a lot more in. But I don't know. I think it's even got a kind of to-be-continued cliffhanger at the end, hasn't it? It is meant to be. It's not a movie. It's the first episode of a show, I think. A very condensed one.
Combinator G prologue.
Yeah, exactly.
I wouldn't be so down to watch that.
Yeah, let's get the whole series going. But I mean, it just gives you everything you need to know. And it's so much more magnetic and so many more things happen. I mean...
It's grounded very effectively in the real world.
Yeah.
Which we've been saying is a nice thing when a new city is created for a Kamen Rider show and it's done effectively. But actually, it's... Because we see the 50th anniversary television channel... celebration, and we see is it Doraemon?
Yeah, we do.
And we see, you know, this and that that people know, and the Tokyo Tower is there, and it's all very, very familiar. As is the introduction of the evil organization, because it's so Kamen Rider. Like, we have seen that before, we know it. It's all very familiar, and that makes it so much easier to be there where it is, because it is coming to you. It's not asking you to create a whole new place in your mind. It's just asking you to make a tiny bit of room in the real world for this extra normal happening.
But didn't it make other Heisei shows seem kind of slow to you guys? I don't know if I'm learning this, but when it made me think about other Heisei shows' first hooks, just that first episode, first 5 minutes. You just made them seem so slow.
Why don't you weigh in on that, Nedge?
Like, in comparison to other Heisei series, I remember the first episode of Denno.
Okay.
Our main writer did not leave a good first impression.
Oh, no. Yeah, stuck in a tree.
And then he just has his wallet stolen with no resistance whatsoever.
I hate that guy.
Well, now, see, okay, I always mentioned how Denno won me over eventually, but it was a hard battle for it to win me over. That, though, I mean, it establishes the character. We might not like him, but I suppose you could argue...
Stand him.
Yeah, I suppose you could argue it does establish the character. But, I mean, are you saying then that you kind of, like me, maybe preferred the opening? What I think is great about it, actually, is that it focuses on the bad guys. It introduces them first.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just like the beginning of every episode. Shocker is an organization hell-bent on ruling the world and what have you.
Yeah. Exactly. It's old school. Maybe that's why I like it, but I just think, you know, I like watching a kid get to learn a new thing like Heisei Rider is all about. But I think if I had to choose between, you know, Kuga discovering the bell in an abandoned what's it, and blah, 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 I think I'd much rather start off with a strongly established antagonist.
I think even before the antagonist, you do have to establish the world, because and that's why I think it's so good that they set it in the real world, much like the original series. Because if you start with the world and then you have the disaster group, then you've already set something in motion. You've changed something, because as far as we know, you know that in superhero television terms, there isn't an evil organization. It's certainly debatable in real world terms, but and then you introduce the evil, and then you can bring it back up again with, oh, and there's a good guy too. And it's like you've hit 3 points already. Well, you're going like full pelt.
You're just Levi Straussing all over me. Yeah, I mean, it's the basics of storytelling. Yeah. Establish equilibrium, disrupt the equilibrium. And I think that's why you have to introduce the bad guys first. And I think
you have to introduce the world first.
Oh,
then the bad
all right,
guys.
The equilibrium first. I mean, out of the bad guys and good guys, you have to introduce the bad guys first, out of those two.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. And I think he just did a good job of that. Variable. Murders aside.
I mean, murders aside.
I just,
of
I'm
course
not.
An evil organization is going to do that.
I just think that bit was a bit, you know, if I had to choose some bits that I'd leave on the curtain room floor, I don't think the murder of the cops or the guards, whatever they were, the mall cops, added anything to it. I think in it, but as Claire's already pointed out to me, it wasn't really, I don't know if you want to save this point for later, sorry. It's not as aimed at children. Gee. And so, but if I take it as a kid's show, which I did still, I would leave that out. I think Shade are an intimidating enough organization just for their realistic paramilitary gear, which I also think was a great strength.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
The fact that you can have that
reasons.
And then turn into a monster later, I think, is a great one.
Yeah, they turned into
I just think that they needed to shoot the people. It was a bit gritty for the sake of gritty, which is a fault. But you can have a hostage situation with guns and not worry that someone will get shot. You don't need to see someone get shot. You can just believe that they might.
Mm.
What I found kind of weird about that scene is that when they were firing the rapid fire machine guns, I guess that led everyone into a panic. But whenever the leader guy shot a pistol into the air, that made everyone stop moving.
It was a freeze pistol.
I don't know. I can see how it would take you out. But I think it is reasonable if you think about the different sounds of many shots and then just one shot. Because one shot and then
maybe.
Nothing, you would be like, oh, crap. But if it's like, no,
it's
then you're like, oh, my God, no, please, that I didn't want to do.
I've only ever heard one gunshot in real life. Excuse me. I've only ever heard one gunshot in real life. And, like, afterwards, the silence was just every, you know, it really was. It was frozen. I'm not about to say, oh, that's what G was going for. But I guess I can see your point. It was funny, though. But it's that classic thing, isn't it, of the leader having the little gun. And using his mouth as his main weapon. It hit a lot.
Yeah.
It was such a classic action movie sequence.
Yeah.
You know, classic action movie opening hook of a nice place. You got like the mother and child and all this stuff, all the cliches that are then blown apart by having the paramilitary group attack. What I liked was I don't know if anyone else picked up on this, because it is kind of an info dump at the start. At this point, Shade aren't an officially functioning government organization, are they? They've actually gone rogue.
Right.
Which I like. I like that they're still calling themselves Shade, though, and they still, whoever this leader is, the guy in charge anyway, of the field leader, whoever he is, he's obviously into it. I like that.
He's the one with the eye scar, right?
Yeah, of course. Oh, you've got to have an eye scar. Yeah. Was his name even Given? I don't even think it was.
Something I find quite interesting with Shade is like the lower leader guy had the eye scar, and the big guy in charge had an eye patch.
To signify your rank, how little of an eye you have.
Whereas with Spectre, the main leader had an eye scar, and the one level below him had an eye patch.
That's a James Bond inversion, is it?
Yeah, yeah. You know, Largo is like my favorite villain because Thunderball's my favorite movie.
Right, I need to get Bond in here eventually.
And James Bond, of course, also has his own themed drink.
He does. He likes a bit of tipple. He likes a bit of gunplay.
Yeah, he has the small gun because he has more things to back it himself up besides firearms.
Yeah, but
he has his other firearm.
I like this this field leader guy. And again, it's funny. I would watch a series of him. I would have watched him for a lot longer as an antagonist. He was. I don't know. He's such a small character, but I did find him fun to watch with his goofy English phrases that everybody has now.
Well, it was like one of Smap said at the end. They took it really seriously.
Yeah, that's refreshing, isn't it?
He was really selling it like he believed in it because he was acting like it was an acting job, not acting like it was an impression.
Oh well, all throughout. I mean, I assume we've all got the same version of this that has Smap, like the bits with Smap actually in it.
No.
Nope. Right?
No?
Just, really?
I'm not sure about that.
Just the Smap's face is not in the top left of your screen as you're watching it.
No, they're not.
Oh, no.
Wow.
No, I didn't have
missing out. Oh, you really missed out.
It really adds.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Especially Kimura on the far left. If you find the version we've got, I guess we'll have
a picture
of it.
It's wonderful.
He's throughout the whole thing. Like, he'll make goofy comments. He riffs on it more than any of them. In fact, none of them really riff on it except him. But when he's not riffing, he's staring at it like a child.
With his mouth open.
Just fascinated. Yeah.
It's really charming, the version that we have, because, I mean, what, as far as you know, what is this that we've watched?
Gee. Oh, right. Why was it made?
What is it a product of? Where did it come from?
Yeah, it's from what I know, it's a anniversary celebration for the TV station, and they wanted to do it with a Kamen Rider, with a Kamen Rider themed thing, and this is what we got.
But from our version, of course, it is the 10-year anniversary of Heisei Kamen Rider as well, which is why Decade is the guest, because it's his time. SMAP have a TV show.
They do.
Do you know who SMAP are, first of all?
I think they're a band.
They formed in 1988, and their first single was released in 1990.
They're a talent group, I guess.
A long-term boy band, and these days they have, or those days or whatever, I'm not sure right now, they have a show. And they do challenges each week.
Well, yeah, this was...
I don't know everything about it.
Well, no, this was Smap Challenge, and they each would be given, you know, something to do that had to do with TV Asahi, basically.
You can imagine, you know, famous presenters doing challenges. Yeah. They get to do things they want to do, and this one...
It just happened that Goro wants to do...
The
Kamen Rider.
The Kamen Rider thing, and because it's the 10-year anniversary of the Kamen Rider, and it's the 50-year anniversary for the TV station, and it's Smap Challenge. It all comes together, and the proper Kamen Rider crew do work on it, and Goro gets to work on it, and...
They reuse Kabuto music.
Yeah, they make him... his own suit and his own mini story, and then when it was aired, which is the version that we have, each member of SMAP has a tiny little version, a tiny picture of themselves in the top corner as we're watching it. So we can watch their reactions as we, the audience, are watching Kamen Rider G. Mm-hmm. And they're allowed to make comments as well, which they occasionally do. And then at the end, they discuss it a little and talk about what it was like. And one of them, no, in fact, Goro himself, that was the first time he watched it. And he is really impressed because he says they really took it seriously. They made me a real Kamen Rider.
Yeah.
Which I was like, yep, that is the thing. Mm-hmm. Taking it seriously, that is really, really important. And that's something that is not always present. But it is in this. And I'm really glad about it because it's really fun to watch. But if you haven't seen that version, you should look it up because it's way fun. It's really cute.
Yeah, I think I'd definitely like to see that, especially if you get a, you know, conversation or them talking afterwards. I think that'd be really great to see. But yeah, I think, I don't know, one of the things that you pointed out was, or that, you know, Goro pointed out was, like, how seriously this was taken. And I feel like, as for all the, like, wackiness of the 70s effects, practical effects, you know, from time to time, the limitations, you know, in the editing, the jump cuts, and all that stuff that doesn't look very good, like, it was all handled a lot better, and it was more sincere and earnest, and I think that really, like, shone through, not only in those ones, but in this, too. I mean, it's, like, I wonder if G impressed me so much because there was so much heart in it, and I don't always get that from other Heisei shows.
It seemed like a fan-made product, didn't it?
It did.
It was, really.
Mm.
I wouldn't let him near my hypothetical children, yeah.
Now, why is that?
Because I don't have real children.
Just read your whole notes.
Yeah.
I know what you're saying. I know what you're saying. I can't have a little fun. Well, I meant that I wouldn't let him near my children because he's mainly because of the theme. And, well, if I wouldn't want to my children thinking that alcoholic beverages will give them superpowers.
That's true. Yeah, well, again, you can tell, Stephen Clare's point again, that it was aimed at a slightly older
stop
audience.
It then.
Yeah,
stop it.
I know, I'm sorry. You do it.
Well, the earlier part of that note, which you have chosen not to read out, was that Kamen Rider G doesn't do much in the way of protecting the children's smiles, which is something that Kamen Rider is supposed to do, which I've said myself many times. But as well as that, letting the alcohol-powered guy near your hypothetical children, I suppose I see that, but Kamen Rider G is probably the only rider who isn't for children. Because SMAP, like I said, they formed in 1988. That is an old group.
That's
like, not walking stick
thing.
Old, but they're not young models anymore.
America's Got Talent old.
It was shown on an adult's talk show. You can hear the audience. They're not kids. G is the rider for rider fans who grew up. And growing up is inescapable, even if you don't allow yourself.
We're trying our best.
But Goro was 36 at the time of filming, which is 2 years older than Hibiki, and people make a big deal about Hibiki being an older guy. He's a man rider rather than a boy, and I'm really into that. I need a man, not a boy. I find it really enjoyable to see a certain level of gravitas in my rider, which is half of that, I think, is the taking it seriously thing, but half of it as well, I think, is that he is a grown-up and he doesn't pretend that he's not.
I'm put my money on the table. I bet Pears love the fact that he starts off, like, explicitly as a villain in the field doing bad stuff and then has to be reminded of his, like, good origins, you know, of his, the goodness in his soul that he has to awaken. That's kind of unusual. I mean, you know, we have so many, this rider was in, like, a lab in a secret, in the dark, and they're turned into a monster and then they escape and be good. He's in broad daylight being evil right at the start.
Mm-hmm.
That's really compelling for me. So he's a complete human, as Claire says, but he's also one that's doing bad stuff.
Like I guess he is sort of framed in public. Mm-hmm. His public identity is evil now.
Mm-hmm.
I did really like that, and it was interesting. It kind of goes to one of my things about Well, anyway, that kind of relates to me to the fact that it was unfortunate that in the show and in the manga even, that Ishinomori never let the designs for the other Shocker, Kaizenigen be very writery. And, like, this, even though he does have a very writer design and the monsters look just like monsters, they almost look like Sentai monsters, but they are borrowed from Kabuto, is that correct?
Yeah.
Okay. Just because they seem so... I haven't seen enough of Kabuto to get a sense for the design there, other than the worm. But they didn't look like they evolved from the worm to me. I need to look more into it. Once I see more of the show, I'm sure I'll be able to see it. But just at a flash, it was like, oh, these look kind of like Sentai monsters. But whatever, that's fine. I know this thing was like thrown together a little bit. But I really like that he actually had to have that turn, almost like in the first, actually, which is something I think is actually pretty strong about that. It was shocking to see. Yes. It was really shocking to me. Like, oh, there's Rider One. Oh, what's he? Oh, he's beating up that guard. Oh, no. What's going on? This is not what I was expecting at all. And it is more interesting, and it adds, I think, a lot to it. And it gives more of a, like, I'm not necessarily into, I need to redeem myself for all the bad stuff I've done. Okay. I kind of like Hongo's approach more, which is I have this, evil body that I've been given, basically. I was forged as a weapon, and I'm going to turn myself against those who did this to me so they don't do it to others, as opposed to, Angel, where, oh, I killed all these people, and from Buffy, guys. And now I need to redeem myself because I'm a vampire with a soul, blah, blah, blah. Like, yeah, I guess you can redeem yourself for the bad stuff you've done, but, like, I don't know. But the way G carried it off.
Such nonsense, Angel. Sorry, I can't keep it in. You didn't do that. You were evil. Like, it's not the same, or there wouldn't be a change. It's just, it's stupid, and it's trash, and I hate it. Shut up, Angel.
Wow. I've only seen one episode.
I've been sitting on that for a long time.
All right, I'm sorry. It's a pretty cool show if you're going to get into more of it, Ned, if you're interested. I thought it was good anyway. Season 4 especially is amazing. One thing I liked that, I'll jump off of what you said, Claire, is that Goro doesn't mope about it. It's just like, I was doing this, I was doing bad, but now I know, I've had a taste of, justice and goodness in this wine, and this is what I want to, personify. I want to make a shift from where I was going and fight for what's right. I don't know. That's what I'm thinking.
It's funny, actually, that it does take so much from Kabuto, the music and the worm.
Yeah.
Because Kabuto has Tendo is young, but he is a man. He's not such a boyish.
He's written as a mature character with complex motivations and all this stuff, yeah.
Yeah. Because Deno was more recent. They could have just taken that music, but they didn't. Yeah. I think that's for a reason.
That's interesting, isn't it? They could have used Kiba's music. They used one of its actors.
Yeah.
I didn't notice. Who was in there from Kiba?
Jiro.
Yeah.
Amazing laugh that he does.
Oh. Okay.
Remember when Goro has just remembered who he is, and they hold hands and go out into the corridor, and there's a pack of camouflage guys, the bad guys in the camo.
Right.
There's a leader, and the leader is Jiro, or what is it, Todoroki from Ibiki?
No, Todoroki.
Zanki?
Some
guy.
Polar bear, Oni, don't guess. There's too many.
Okay. All right.
More importantly,
he's not a main one.
He's Jiro.
Okay, I'll have to go back and look at that
Toki?
Again.
I think. Is that... Anyway. Hey, we've only got one Hibiki fan listening, haven't we? Hi.
I've never watched Hibiki.
It's an interesting segue there for me, at least. Don't want to question Goro's acting chops, because, he did act as part of SMAP. But,
It's been in many films.
Yeah, and TV stuff, and it was pretty funny watching Jiro's actor sell his
He's so fun to watch, because he just always looks like he's having the time of his life.
Yeah, yeah. See, I'd probably be willing to take a few kicks from Goro. They did not look very dangerous, but I don't know, he was into it, I could tell he was, which was nice.
Oh, just one funny note. That was so ridiculous that, you know, he's in one room and he's, you know, just tasted the wine in his camo, and then he goes out and he's dressed completely differently. It's like, yeah. Where did your girlfriend have those clothes waiting for you?
Maybe he was wearing them under his camo.
What was that?
Maybe he was wearing them under his camo.
I guess that's possible.
Well, I think we can sum it up easier. Simple as that, right?
Well, James Bond comes in wearing that stuff.
Tuxedo under a wetsuit. Come on.
Yeah.
I saw that movie.
James Bond has never worn a shirt that jazzy, though, has he?
No. Which movie?
That was some shit.
Was it a Pierce Brosnan one?
No, I think it was Roger Moore. Oh. I don't know. You're the Bond man. You gotta find that one out for me. But I loved acting wise. Thank you. How much it did with a small cast? I've kind of already touched on this, but I felt I knew these silly characters, even Scarface, who doesn't even get a name, better after 10 minutes. Than I do many recent Ryder characters after 20 plus episodes. And I know that I'm going to draw a lot of heat for that, but of course it's personal opinion, everything is, but I just felt as a first episode, again, not as a film, because this isn't a film, as a first episode, it gave me more, and maybe it links in with what Claire said about Goro being more of an adult character. He hasn't got as much learning to do. He already seems like he's got a lot of opinions and feelings of his own. He's got a background. He's, you know, he had a job, relationships with people. But again, you know, Kota is supposed to have relationships with people, but I just don't find them anywhere near as compelling.
Kamen Rider is an adult concept because it's about taking responsibility for things that aren't your fault,
but that shouldn't
do rely on you.
I don't think that should be an adult concept.
Well, I do know, but I mean, I think that it sits more easily on an adult character than it does on a zany kid.
Maybe, but I don't know about you guys, but I'd definitely rather have. Well, no, this probably isn't a very controversial view now, but I'd much rather have a smaller, well-developed cast than a Ben-Hur cast of thousands who don't, like, there's a lot of guys all doing different stuff, but I don't really feel I know them.
Yeah, I think small cast is the way to go. I mean, that way you just have more, I mean, you have tighter control, and you can give each of the people something to do and not have anybody standing around looking... nothing to do.
The motivations were so clear. Fruit jokes. Their motivations were so clear. I don't know. I mean, somebody disagree with me on this. We're all agreeing on Jeet. Like, would anyone else not watch more of this? Like, I don't know. I don't know how to ask the question.
I would continue.
Oh yeah, I wanted more. Continue. I want to see him patch things up. I really want to see the Hongo Ruriko relationship resolved.
And,
we don't get that.
It's more interesting, Hongo and Ruriko's.
Oh, I think so too. But the sad thing is, you know, as far as I know, in the original show, you never really get a conclusion of that. It's just like, oh yeah, things changed, and now I'm in Switzerland.
Yeah. Stayed in Europe, kind of self. Found herself a nice Swiss or French guy, and just settled down. Yeah,
I guess so. But I want to see this developed. I'd like to see the rest of the story because I think there's a decent amount of stuff there.
Yeah, I was quite annoyed that it ended on. I mean, if you're gonna say the Kamen Rider who fights for love, don't Spider-Man your girlfriend. Don't do that. That's annoying.
I have to be alone. Yeah, but like I said, I do think it is important that a rider at first. Feels that they can't interact with other humans.
Yeah, but he doesn't have to leave her not even knowing who he is.
What a jerk.
Because he vanished, and now she doesn't know who he is, so if he's going to leave, then he's going to vanish twice. That's not cool.
Which girlfriend and which Spider-Man?
All of them.
No, even I know what you mean. Yeah, the idea of, I can't be with you, it's too dangerous, which I said.
Spider-Man 2, Mary Jane, walking away in a graveyard, I can't be with you. Whisper, I'm Spider-Man.
Yeah,
no one cares. Just have a girlfriend.
I've always disliked that cliche. It's very easy to solve if you just have the slightest grain of maturity. And I think we as a species have surpassed that little plot point. I think we need to move on to greater things, you know.
No one ever went broke and all that.
But I mean, talking about the continuity, like, again, I'm burying Gaim fiercely right now.
Well, that is because it is dead.
But what the heck? I mean, it's just the first example that comes to mind because it's what we were talking about most recently, excluding Kiva, which, like, I have no problem with.
Right.
What's his name? He's got, like, an old-fashioned Japanese name, hasn't he? The imprisoned leader of Shade.
Yeah.
Isn't he called, like, Tokugawa or something? He's got, like, a super, like, feudal-era evocative kind of name. He's called, like, Nobunaga or Tokugawa or something.
Well, I think it is Nobunaga.
I did something like that. What?
It's Tush, I think.
Okay, maybe it's Tokugawa then. But whatever he's called, like, I was so much more... And this is how you introduce a villain. You know, I'm so much more interested in what he's after than what Ryoma is after.
Yeah, why doesn't he mind being in jail? Why does he still feel like he has power?
What's the road, the dead
why
rose?
Why are people still doing what he tells them?
Is that just a metaphor? Does it mean more?
So many questions.
Yeah, it's fascinating. You can set up a villain so easily like that. Whereas Ryoma, we've seen so much of it, and he just annoys me. I find him cliched.
He's got
and
no
dull.
Problems.
Yeah.
He's got nothing to overcome.
Just laughs at everything. And this imprisoned Shade Leaver guy seems like he would be very confident and arrogant as well, but he doesn't show it. He's you know...
Can I just say something about Gaim?
Okay.
Go ahead.
For me.
It was just
for my money.
The moment where I finished with Gaim was when Sid stepped on to his second elevator in a row. Not elevator, escalator. Second
oh
escalator
goodness.
In a row. That was the worst thing I've ever seen.
Where were they? The escalator mall.
That was so bad. Seriously. Like.
Well, sir, you've tried all the escalators in the store. Which one can I interest you in?
Did it so evilly,
like
pottering
one.
On. Hoo, hoo, hoo. No, you've just been on one. Where are you going? Why is there
He's
no one else
having fun.
That was so
you
rubbish.
You're an aimless teenager just riding escalators in the flipping shopping center, making a nuisance of yourself.
Man, Sid must be boring to go to amusement parks with. He just, like, just the whole time he's going to be riding the turntable.
Something. And you're on there with him and he's just chuckling to himself.
The ride hasn't even started yet, man. What are you Why are you laughing?
Because everything's going according to plan.
Yeah, the ride's going to start. That's the plan.
has everybody seen... probably not, actually, because I know... I think Pez and Nejiran haven't seen Kabuto. Am I right?
I've seen a little bit of Kabuto.
But you haven't seen the movie, which is what I'm getting to.
No. I've seen clips of the movie, and I know Caucasus has that rose thing.
Thank you. Yep. Thanks for the segue. That was immediately what I thought of. Okay, now we might get into this topic here, or might do it another time, this idea of evil riders and whether a Kamen Rider can be evil. Caucasus is probably my favorite evil rider. And it's not just because he's played by a guy that I used to watch have real fights and loved, but partly it is. It's also because they make that guy wear a furry hat and give him a blue rose, which is so, like, completely out of character for him. But that's immediately what it made me think of. That idea, one thing I love about Caucasus is he's so obviously masculine and terrifying, strong, but then they give him, they subvert that. He won't mind me saying this. We're not friends. He won't mind me saying this, but he's not an attractive man. Old Sashi, and he, the contrast between his face and a furry hat and a blue rose is just amazing. They don't give him any lines, which is annoying because I find him quite charismatic, but I love that contrast, and I think, again, they use it here where you have this grody old guy.
That's why you love Perry Saturn.
That is why I love Perry. I just like ugly guys who get to be pretty. You're welcome.
It's nice.
I love this old guy in this cell. But then, like, he has this romantic little sequence of him looking at a dead rose, and I just think, bam, badass. That's what I think of. I don't know. This phrase sure does get overused a lot. But for me, It's a little bit hard-boiled.
Yeah, so, I mean, I liked that his robe was not shiny in any way. It was proper heavy fabric. It was nicely textured. It looked heavy. It wasn't scrimped on. It didn't look like crappy dress-up robe.
You like nice clothes in Ryder, don't you? You like it when they make the extra effort.
Well, it wasn't, like, nice. It was all dusty and whatever, but I like it when things look like they weren't just created for 4 seconds worth of use. I don't want to watch someone in a Halloween costume that they bought in Walmart. I want to watch someone who's wearing real clothes that might last them the whole of the series, even if they move sometime.
Do you remember Caucasus? How cool he looked?
Kind of.
Okay. If we're fantasizing a little about if this series continue, and all well and good, the guy who plays Evil Shade Man originally, but, you know, if I had to recast it, I knew who I'd make my lead villain.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, yeah, I'm just marking out over how they used Musashi in the movie. But anyway,
So, hi, I'm here, apparently. Based on what I do know of the carries the flame, and while adding a unique twist, his story is still that of Kamen Rider, and it's not just his design. The short film seems to me to be a love letter to the franchise as a whole, with a modern twist on the man twisted by a nebulous organization while preserving sounds and visual elements native to Heisei-era Kamen Rider up to that point. Decade was an interesting choice for a cameo. I don't know how far they were into production of that series at that point, or even development of the show.
One episode of that.
One episode?
Yeah.
Okay, that would explain it. But as much as I enjoy the series and the character, I personally wouldn't say Tsukasa is as congruent with the idea of Kamen Rider as Goro is. Goro has a solid motivation for fighting, love, and actively fights back against the corrupting force, while Tsukasa is quite literally lost and submits to Dai Shocker, albeit as the leading force there.
Thank you. I disagree. No, I'm going in the opposite direction on Tsukasa there. Because Tsukasa is Douglas Quaid from Total Recall.
Tsukasa.
In that he's not
seen
really,
Total Recall.
Like, the Tsukasa that we know, he's not a real person. He is an invention of amnesia. It's a little more complex than that in Total Recall and in Decade 2.
Decade
really.
Is a pretty
but anyway,
complex series.
He's not a real person. He's only like 2 months old, so he can be forgiven some wobbles, like, am I evil, am I falling under the spell of it? He doesn't know who he is, he doesn't know what he's doing, or if that's his, like, he technically belongs to evil because he was made from an evil person accidentally or on purpose. So if he, like, defaults to that, then I don't think you can really fault him. And he does come through in the end, give these people air. But Decade as, I know this term has been mentioned, but Decade as a meta writer is my favorite reading of Decade as a whole. Hmm. And G serves the same purpose, because Tsukasa has to kill all writers so that we, the viewers, would remember them. That's how it's said, I think, in movie Tyson 2010.
Yeah, very cool.
And I love that.
Yeah.
That he had to go through and, you know, be destroying worlds and meet all the writers and stuff, and things would be not the same and not completely different, but different readings of the series' original themes. Like, Kiba is a baby a little boy in Decade Kiba World, because Wataru is such a baby, and because it's to do with growing up and things like that. And that was, we had to see it all in those new ways, and Tsukasa had to be in opposition to them, because that is the best way to get those writers back onto screens, back into people's minds, back into fandom.
I bet so many people suddenly cared,
exactly,
or thought they cared
when,
about, like,
when
Kuga and
someone says something mean about a series that you once watched, you're like, blah, 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 blah.
I bet there are so many people who hate Decade that haven't seen 3 series that it covers.
Well, like, a lot of people were very upset,
like, I
with
understand.
Kiba being a child in Decade.
No, it's completely perfect.
Yeah,
it
is so good
it
that Kiba is a child, because it says so many things about the original Kiba series, and it says so many new things in, like, in the Decade episodes. But G in the same way, is a massive fanboy who gets to be that guy. And so then we, the audience, instead of remembering how we felt about past Kamen Riders, we get to think, how would I feel if I, like that, got to be a Kamen Rider? And it essentially serves the same purpose, but in a different area of fandom.
Yeah.
I cut off Decade at Movie Tyson 2010, because why go any further? It's just silly. And that is a pretty triumphant ending there. He thought that he was good in his series. He turns out to kind of be evil. And then he, you know, gives his life for justice, and ends up pretty okay with his pals, you know, continuing to grow. Whereas G starts evil, threatens hostages with death, frightens children, upsets his fiance and so on, and then remembers how he actually wants to roll after someone believed in him. And Kivala's victory of a decade is pretty similar to that, because Tsukasa knows that he, you know, is the destroyer of worlds. He knows that Natsumi, as Kivala, can destroy him and can essentially redeem through death. Not only it, when someone dies, you think more fondly of them. So, you know, Decade is dead. What did he do after all? And then we get to look back at his life and so on. But also she's been his driving force, really, all along. She has believed in him, even though he's a total dweeb. And it sort of acknowledges her sacrifice in putting up with him, that she actually gets to just stab him and put a stop to all of his nonsense finally. So I reckon that they're pretty much on a par, and I really like both of them.
Well, it kind of takes me back to the very original question of this whole episode. Real writer. Yeah, a hell of a lot of people who'd accuse Decade of not being a real writer. And you know what?
They can sit on it.
No, they have a point. Decade is so different in terms of concept to other writers. I know we don't like using the word meta, but yeah, he is a writer. He's like, he is special. He's meant to be special. And I think G's the same. Yeah. I think that they're deconstructive writers. They're you know, they're post-modern writers, whatever, you know. They make us take another look at this material.
Writers get knocked down so they can get up again and inspire us to get up. That is an important part of writer-ness. Mm-hmm. Their failures and their, like, weird deconstructions.
You stunned everyone in silence.
I do that, yeah. Imagine if they could see me.
Well, show's over. Show's over, I guess. We can't follow that up.
Well, I mean, I'm trying. Right, okay, so you raise a good point about what the rules are. What makes a writer and what they have to contend with to prove themselves. And what's funny is, like, and about the legitimacy. What you made me think even more was about how seriously people take G. Mm. I mean, he's the joke writer, right? Mm. Just like Decade's the silly, weird, different writer. But what I thought was, like, okay, G's motif, silly as it is, it's tied in so naturally to the short, I guess we'll call it a short, it's tied in so naturally to the in-universe rules. Romance, you know, we're talking wine, right? Romance. Fragrance being the strongest catalyst of memory. The enemies being worms. You know, specifically the main one being a worm, a bug that eats wine grapes. But it ties in to the in-universe rules and the metatextual elements. Specifically, Goro being vintage, politely. I think that is his catchphrase, that his vintage has reached its peak or something similar. So the idea of him being an aged writer, how old did you say he was?
36,
okay. So yeah, he's a heck of a lot older than a normal writer. He's a heck of a lot older than most heroes on Japanese kids' TV, period. He's about twice the age of the average, you know, Japanese kids show protagonist, mm-hmm. isn't he? And I think it's a shame if you watch G and just think it's a joke, because I think that's why, unless I'm missing something about Goro, that he loves wine. I think maybe they chose that motif for a reason.
Yeah,
and I think it's tied in very well. Just like I thought Decade was. I think Decade bears so much more analysis than people seem to give it.
Also, I totally stole the soda belts from the wine belt.
Yeah, that remind anyone else of anything?
You know what?
And he looks just like Fize.
I haven't seen Fize either.
Okay. You know what he looks
you've
like,
seen a
though.
Picture.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And by the way,
speaking of
things I know about Fize, which are very few, apparently my birthday falls on the same day as Kaixa Day.
Well, Kaixa Day is, you know.
What's that?
Well, it's a thing. I mean.
I've seen it be a thing, I don't remember.
Isn't it just his phone number?
Yes.
Yeah. So, you know, I don't really know how I'm meant to celebrate Kaixa Day.
Well, on your birthday, you type that into a phone and you just see what happens and let us know.
I think we're meant to celebrate Kaixa Day by coming up with names that are ridiculously hard to agree on how they're translated or pronounced.
Does anybody have anything to say about GACT?
No. Yeah, I do.
Because Decade is in G, which is Kamen Rider Popstar. And then in some, I think it might be Moving Tyson 2010. It might not.
Oh, as Rider Man.
Yeah, Gat comes in as Rider Man.
Isn't it Let's Go All Riders?
Rider Man was in there for some reason, though.
And Gat also is a pop star. So there's some sort of circularity there.
Gat is also an old pop star.
Yes. And I really, really, really liked Gat as Rider Man. Because he was a man.
Yeah.
Not a boy.
I think we're noticing something you enjoy.
Men. I like men.
What is that? What are we hearing?
Maybe he's giving us a song?
Okay.
I'm not doing that. My youngest brother is practicing the piano.
Oh. Well, good for him.
Okay. Well, I mean, Jose, if you have something to say about G's qualifications, then please chime in. And you, either of you, you know, got any...
I'm satisfied, honestly.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll say he's a writer, just he better not be drinking while driving.
Yeah, that's a good point.
He's driving while fueled by one.
What's everyone's favorite wine? Neither can I. There.
I don't have a favorite wine.
I like port.
Yeah.
I don't really care for wine. I like to cook with it.
Yeah.
But port is nice.
I'll drink Guinness, cider, or whiskey, but I rarely do anymore.
You guys.
Is there a particular wine that's better for cooking, Claire?
Red.
Yeah, red. Unless it's fish. Now, I don't really know much about wines because I just wait until other people buy them for me.
And then I use those.
Yeah. Which is basically just every Christmas.
We haven't used wine in Let's Get Ready to Cook yet. But what would we do for a G recipe?
Now that is a very good question.
Mm-hmm.
Boy.
Probably. No, I can't say that's rude.
Family show.
No, you know what though? Let's do that next.
What?
Let's do Kamen Rider G here.
Alright. You heard it here first, folks. Okay.
Everyone should know.
I think I've already given my opinion on G's qualifications as a writer, and our initial question was, is G a real writer? And I think, as with any good question, maybe by the end of the conversation you realize the question was completely irrelevant and you want to ask a different one. No, I don't know if G is a real writer, and I don't know if there's such a thing as a real writer. I think that G reflects a great deal of Ishinomori's original concept for what Kamen Rider should have been, but I also think he completely stands out, maybe by virtue of that, in the Heisei era, completely stands out on his own, just like Decade. And I don't want to call him a meta writer, because we have a rule against that word, but there should be a word for this guy. He's a bonus writer. He's a deconstruction writer. He's a writer that hopefully makes you think about what a Kamen Rider is, and whether he fits in, and why he doesn't, or why he does.
I think he still has the suit.
Yeah, somewhere. But I don't think G is a joke, and I think that's the thing that gets me most about it. It's funny, we did commentaries for the 90s Kamen Rider movies, and one thing that concerns me about them, And I think it concerns Shin too, is that they'll be forgotten about because they're short, which is really strange to me because they're relatively short. People are used to 50 episodes. Mm. And I think G bears just as much analysis as Gaim, as Double, as Kuga, as Ryuki, as any other series that people like to talk about a lot.
They establish the world solidly and G works within the rules of those worlds.
Yeah. Well, I mean, maybe it benefits from being so short, so it doesn't have any time to mess up. But, yeah, that's one thing I really liked about it, is just how neat it works. I complained a lot in Gaim about how messy it is. I think G is a well-oiled machine by comparison, and I really like that. I think it's got a lot of heart, too. But I also think it's efficient. That's really refreshing to see.
Huh. So we were talking about favorite drinks. Everyone should know mine.
Okay. It can't be. Wait, are you old enough to drink a martini?
Cola pop.
Dang it! I was gonna do that quote, and now you ruined it. Vodka martini, shaken, not stirred.
Perfect. I feel like I'm in Scotland.
Not Wales.
Bond. James Bond.
Are we just doing accents now?
Yeah, pretty much. Okay, thanks for listening.
You don't have to do that. It's already done.
But it'll sound crap. What will it sound like? Like, will it go from me saying, da-da-da, a real Kamen Rider, and then bam, like outro music and Matt saying, thanks for listening. Join us on the next funky episode.
What's wrong with that?
I don't know.
Nothing.
Seems gross. Can we stop recording?
If you experience... All right, Todd, don't worry. That's not going to be the ending. That's not how we roll here at the Uncommon Cast RX. To let the listeners in on the little secret, I had to go away partway through this episode, unfortunately, because of, well, frankly, it was poor time management on my part, and I forgot to wrangle things properly, and therefore I had to deal with the consequences of my action, just like Kamen Rider G and every other good Kamen Rider there is. Actually, that's not true. This isn't Spider-Man. That's not what Kamen Rider is. That's not what makes Kamen Rider Kamen Rider, actually. Like I think Claire said earlier, it's taking responsibility for things that happen to you or for circumstances that for which you are not explicitly responsible. And I think that's a large part of it, because Hongo didn't have to keep fighting Shocker. If you just look at it from a point of view of, you know, what did he do? He didn't do anything. He was innocent. However, he had the power. Oh boy, here we go, Spider-Man. He had the power to do it, so he did it to protect other humans, and that's laudable, and that's what makes him a hero. And G kind of does the same thing. Goro says something to the worms as they're transforming and fighting him, and he says that my heart is still mine. And I think that's a pivotal line, and that may be what makes him a writer. Of course, saying something and doing something are two totally different things. Obviously, everybody knows that, but what I mean when I say that is words aren't enough. Your actions need to back up your words. Just like if you say that you love somebody or something, but you treat it poorly or neglect it, then you don't really love it, and you prove that by your actions. What's in our heart is what we speak, but also what we do is reflective of that, and it can be the litmus test to tell whether or not someone is being honest or forthright by listening to their words and observing their actions. And I don't think we need to go any much farther down that road. Further down that road. Sorry, with a U. That's the... we don't need to do an English lesson either. Excuse me. I'm just so excited. I'm, slurring because I'm glad to be here. And I don't know, maybe I got a little G in me, a little justice this morning. No, I am not podcasting while under the influence. Anyway, to move away from that, I wanted to say another thing that I think really makes G a writer. And Todd kind of brought up the question of, well, are we asking the wrong question And yeah, sure, G's a writer, but like, what really is a writer? And I, you know, there also is this question of evil writers and how do they work. And I would dismissively say right now, of course, further conversation can be held on the matter, that evil writers are not writers because of their hearts, because of what they choose to do with their cursed bodies. And I think it's that simple. It's the spirit in which the individual acts. I was just kind of thinking that this, like, independent spirit and this defiant spirit, that the writers, a true writer is somebody who has the power and the freedom to act however they choose, and they choose a noble and righteous and, you know, good for everybody path. Because it seems like in today's world, when one speaks of nobility and righteousness, they can often be accused of that meaning that they are separate from others who are below them, and that they are free to use them and abuse them. And one, I don't think that's true. And even if the few do take advantage of the many to fatten and cushion themselves from the shocks of life, I don't think that the rest of us who are under them, so to speak, profit from seeing ourselves as nothing more than victims. I think if we seize our own destinies as tightly as we can, and I don't know, through goodness and through loving other people around us, and by making ourselves available to support others with whom we are close, in the kind, you know, selflessly, but also really, honestly, in the hopes that they'll return that we can seize wholeness for ourselves and for each other, and help make, I guess, kind of insulate ourselves from the, I guess, evils of people who would seek to use other humans to profit themselves in many ways. And I'm sorry I'm getting so darn philosophical, but, you know, this is what writer does to me. So I think beyond just going with the template of Takeshi Hongo, which there's nothing wrong with that, he, saying his name silently evokes all these things, which I'm trying to really pull out. And it's difficult because I just want to say Hongo and hold him up as this paradigm. But the reasons why he's a paradigm are specifically because, as I was mentioning before, he has this freedom and power and agency. He can choose whatever he wants, but he does what is right. So an individual who owns themselves and their own freedom and does good with it when they could have done evil or done harm to others is a writer. And specifically, you know, like, they should have a belt and they should transform and things like that. But I guess just one last note to add to this before, see, note wine, ha ha ha, very funny, people love when you do that kind of stuff, right? Just to add one more note to this before we sign off, and then I let you enjoy the rest of the group's musings that happened without me. And anyway, this segment will end the episode proper, and then it'll go into just some kind of fun stuff that you can listen to or not. I found it amusing, so hopefully you will too. I think the meta writer thing, or, you know, Decade and G being, you know, writers of writers, or the truest of the writers, can be kind of true to some extent. And I think deconstructionists, or people who aren't satisfied with the community within which they exist, and of course this would be the writers writing these characters this way specifically, kind of say more about the thing, about being a writer or whatever, than if they just continue blithely being a Kamen Rider show and not thinking of themselves in that way. It's kind of the approach with which they, it's the way that they carry themselves. You can kind of get a sense from how the writer constructs the writer constructs the world that his writer, his or her, God willing, maybe we should have women writing too, constructs the world which their writer inhabits. And just to pull a historical reference, and you guys can fact check me on this, but in many Christian circles, you know, Jesus is known as being kind of anti-Jewish establishment and government. Of course, they had a religious hierarchy and structure set up because they were under Roman rule at his time. But a lot of people will say that he chastised the Pharisees and the sages and the Sadducees and the script people writing. I'm sorry, I'm blanking on the word. But anyway, he criticized sharply all these people, and therefore he must have been against them. But that's not necessarily true. If you go through and if you remove your Western Greek lenses and you interpret the scriptures or the gospel specifically through a Hebraic lens with some understanding of the Hebrew Torah, the Tanakh, the writings, you can see a lot of things that he says are very Jewish, and a lot of parables, which I hope everybody's familiar just with the concept of, you know, Jesus telling parables. A lot of parables are mirrored in rabbinic literature, and some were told before he was born, and some were told after he died. But the fact that he's saying Pharisaic things, he's saying rabbinic things, to me, historically, clearly puts him in the place of a rabbi or proto-rabbi, because they didn't specifically exist before the destruction of the Second Temple in approximately 70 AD or CE, if you prefer. So he, as a Pharisee, as a rabbi, as a religious Jewish man, as somebody within the structure, sharply criticized his colleagues, for lack of a better word, because he was in the position to do that. He was a deconstructionist to some extent of the structure and establishment that people had built up around Torah and the things of God, and he criticized them for not doing it properly, not because they weren't following codes and procedures properly, but because their hearts weren't always in the right place, and that is something that was something for which he would not stand. And to bring it back to Ryder, like I said about Goro's heart being his, he had justice and love and mercy in his heart, and he had that overrule the like wicked destructive efficiency of his body, and just like Hongo and like all the other writers who took a stand and made a decision to work against what maybe their natural tendencies might be given the status and power that they had been given, stood up for those who couldn't stand up for themselves and helped those who were powerless to defend themselves against monsters and killing machines. And that's what really makes him a writer. And, you know, so saying that, we can still have the evil writer discussion. I think it'll maybe more sharply define what does and doesn't make somebody a writer, and of course what I say isn't definitive, and neither is what anybody else says here, but I think Claire had some really strong points, and I think everybody had something really substantive and good to add to this conversation, and I think it's something we should keep having. So, listeners, if you totally disagreed with us, or agreed on some parts but wanted to bolster, or anything else, critique, add to, take away from anything that we said here, please go ahead and write into us. I'll give you the information at the end of the show of how to contact us, and let us know what you felt. Did you feel G was a writer or just a joke, and why or why not? Give us, we want to have a conversation with you, so the ball's in your court now.
I think we've lost Matt, and he can edit this out.
Jose, what are you doing here?
Why did the Jose attack?
A wild Jose appeared.
Folks, I don't know if we're going to leave this in, but Jose is talking to us over the intercom.
Is he?
I don't know. He's called me a villain. I don't know why.
What's he saying? I can't read it.
Jose claims he is half of a man. I don't know what the other half is. From here it looks like O's.
Cream cheese? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. Half man, half biscuit. Okay. So if anyone else wants to weigh in on the bad guy, I'd like it, because I feel lost without Matt.
The bad guy. I don't know. I should have something to say about him. I'm the Bond guy, and villains are like a thing.
Okay, well, as a Bond fan, right?
Are there any villains who are in jail? Sorry.
I was going to get onto that. Yeah, as a Bond fan, is it not kind of a James Bond thing? I'll admit, even though I am a dapper British man.
Say his own Tokugawa.
Tokugawa, there you go, that's his name. Even though I am a dapper British man myself, I've not seen a whole lot of Bond. But my understanding of like a Bond villain is not an attractive man who gets by on his charisma and sort of sits in a secluded chair somewhere.
Like murmuring and stuff going on. So that's a thing.
Hi there. A Bond villain sits, secluded away from the world in his ivory tower. Someone's echoing me. Jose!
Hold on, I'm bringing up the notes.
Oh man, I had something. I could have said something there.
Let me just record this myself, I guess. A Bond villain sort of sits in an ivory tower, away from the world, giving their orders out to their little soldiers all around the country and whatever.
Well,
and so for me, I can't tell what was happening. It's driving me nuts.
No, that's
me
like
too.
You can't tell. It is
really
impossible.
Oh, thank you.
It's done.
Thank you. Okay.
Right.
So,
ivory tower.
Yes. So the chief villain themselves, you can't actually get to them necessarily. They're hidden away somewhere, and it might even be in a position that makes them technically weak in a story sense. Like Tokugawa, he can't really do anything. He's in prison, and yet somehow his influence is so strong. He's established himself so well as a villain. He's still leading. He's still leading this terrorist army to cause chaos in the world in a very active way, and he's just sat there. How is he doing it? And I think that, for me, that's kind of a Bond villain thing. I never saw Bond villains as guys that lead from the front. They're usually stroking a cat in the background, right?
Well, that's just Blofeld. A lot of them go up into the field. Like, Largo, for example, was right there. He was...
But now, Largo, is he not a sort of lieutenant?
Well, for Thunderball, he's technically speaking the main villain. But he served right below Blofeld.
Yeah, that's what I mean, sort of the top-ranking guy. Rarely has to do anything very active.
Well, Goldfinger was there, present for the plan for Project Grand Slam when they were going to... I'm going to spoil that movie now. Where they were going to irradiate all the gold in Fort Knox so that Goldfinger's gold would be worth more. That's scientifically impossible, but I still love that movie.
It is a great plan.
Yeah, economically it's a good plan. Logically it is not, because you cannot irradiate gold that way. Well, you can, but if you just peeled it off, it'd be totally fine.
Yeah, I think you'd have an easier time just melting it.
Yeah, but he's kind of a wacky guy.
I think most Bond villains are wacky guys.
Do you expect me to talk? No, Mr. Bond, I expect you to die.
The top guys.
Eventually.
My dad would have loved to have heard that. That was his favorite line. the top guys. I don't know how this has changed. I mean, okay, I don't know who actually invented this. I wish I could drop media theorist names for you guys. It might have been Vladimir Prop, who came up with the idea of the spheres of action that different characters occupy. Now, this idea of having a top villain who is the main antagonist, and when you defeat that guy, when for whatever reason they're taken out of the narrative, then everything's fine, and you're back to your equilibrium. But they almost always have a bodyguard of some sort, which in media theory they're sometimes called the dragon in the narrative, right? Yeah, so like they're the monster that you actually have to slay, because they're the legitimate physical threat.
Yeah, like
and that's
Jaws,
I see,
for example.
Well, that's why I see Scarface. Yeah, exactly, like Jaws, one of the movies, Jaws. But that's why I see the Scar guy as. He's the dragon, and then at the back, behind him, is this enigmatic... The roles are so clear-cut, and that's a problem I have with Gaim, is that they aren't. I think Sid and you know, Minato, they're both dragons, I guess. It's, I don't know. I'm not asking for it to be more
dragons.
Cliche, but I love how clear it is. God, guy.
No,
gee.
I thought all the energy riders were dragons.
Yeah, pretty much, I think. And that's too many for me, you know. I'm sure, isn't it true in James Bond that he'll have, like, one major physical challenge before he takes out the bad guy? Odd Job, Jaws, Red
Well, in Diamonds Are Forever, they had Mr. Flib and Mr. Went.
Yeah, but they work as a team, oh, so yeah, they were essentially great. Function as one guy.
Yeah, but you know what?
They're a romantic couple.
There's
couple,
a bodyguard,
the
isn't there, for the chief villain. Always has a physical... It's a classic kung fu movie thing as well. Classic 90s action movie thing. There's an evil gangster who's flooding the slums with cocaine, but then he's always got Dolph Lundgren watching his back or whatever. You know, like Benny Okida's watching his back, you know?
I haven't watched that many old kung fu movies, I'm sorry to say.
When I say old, I can mean like 1993. So, but I like how G felt like a proper old school action movie again, as I said before. Jose is chipping in again, folks. He says, "Oh, I saw that Batman film. Wait, what? Was that the one with the nipples?" Yes, Jose, it was one with the nipples. In fact, didn't all of the Batman films in the 90s have like two villains? Every single one, and they were like,
pretty much.
There was a clever one and a tough one. I don't know. I didn't. Pay much attention.
Only the ones we're going to talk about, and the other one just doesn't exist.
Which one don't we talk about? I'm sorry.
Batman and Robin.
I think I'm breaking a nerd code here.
The one with the nipples.
Which villains are in that? Because then I'll remember.
Mr. Freeze, Poison Ivy, Bane.
Oh, Arnie is Mr. Freeze. Oh, come on. How can you ignore that? That's amazing.
Yeah, Mr. Freeze isn't my favorite ice-themed DC villain anyway.
Should I say, it's cool.
My favorite's Captain Cold.
As well, always.
Yes. Yeah, Bane is Poison Ivy's dragon in that, you know? Yeah. So you have a clever villain with a bodyguard.
What clever? No, nothing in that movie you could call clever.
Well, I mean, we're not here to diss Batman. We're here to wait for Matt to come back. I hope he edits this out.
Padding.
Yeah, let's go back to the notes, because I mean, otherwise all I can do is talk about Musashi.
What's happened there? Who's that?
I don't know.
You know, this exact same thing happened to me earlier when I was in a production of Beauty and the Beast recently.
Okay, who did you play?
Cogsworth.
Nice.
The clock.
Did you do a British accent?
I tried to.
That's really funny. A production of Beauty and the Beast. Disney's Beauty and the Beast. Like, that's interesting.
I'm going to say one of my favorite lines, that line that's it's from the movie. Okay, I'm a showing Belle around the castle within the tour, and I say, now that is an example of the late neoclassic Baroque period. And as I always say, if it's not Baroque, don't fix it.
Oh, what accent do you think that was? Where was he coming from then?
America.
Oh, come on.
It wasn't as bad as it came.
Do you not remember when we first talked to Bailey and I? Oh, that's leaving us. Dang.
Okay, Jose, come and do your notes.
Do you not remember when I first talked to Bailey and I did my Oklahoma accent?
That's Californian.
Yeah.
No, that's just America.
Irish wristwatch. Can you all hear me?
Yes, we can. 10-4. Pip, pip, what?
Syllabus.
It's a go. All right, tell me when.
I swear.
Right now.
Americans don't know that there's a North. All right.
Oh, we do. We just don't want to pay attention to it.
Yeah.
If I
almost
think
of notices.
Beep, beep.
Yeah, we love that doctor.
Howdy, howdy.
Oh, yeah, Christopher Eccleston.
Jose, say a thing.
Yeah, if Jose's really joining, do a little 3-2-1 mark for me, please, so that I can sync up your tracks or make sure they're synced. Sunk, please? Yeah, sorry. I'm hurrying, but who knows what else.
Synchronize.
Okay. Unless anyone else has anything else to say, because like nobody's in charge.
So I think we've proven by now that James Bond is a Kamen Rider.
If you experienced any complications, would like to make a testimonial, or have any questions, send your correspondence to uncommoncastrx@gmail.com or contact the Uncommon crew via Twitter @GomisQ, @Grimhelm. Oh, wait, he's not here. @IllustratorClaire, @CommonWriterPez, @Professor.
You just call me a traitor.
No, Illustrator.
Oh, okay.
Burn up the egg.
Illustrator.
I thought you called me Traitor Claire, and I thought, what have I done to deserve this?
Hellish traitor.
It was going so well till then.
And then, Bailey, what's yours?
I don't have a Twitter.
Bailey doesn't have Twitter. Keep an eye on Uncommon RX, where one can receive updates, deliver input, and give feedback. Also, visit uncommonrx.tumblr.com for additional content. If you experience a henshin lasting more than 4 hours, please consult a medical doctor.
Ew.
Dr. Maki does not count.
Or Dr. Shinigami.
No.
Or Dr. Warson.
Especially. Okay, well, I guess let's export things. Man, that was quick. I want to make more notes next time. Are we going to have, like, a whole one for Evil Riders? Because I want to yell about Evil Riders.
Let's wait until I've finished Kiva and we can talk about Dark Kiva.
Well, I guess. Dark Kiva isn't...
He hasn't finished in time.
Well, no, it's not a spoiler. I just, like, he's not really what I'm getting at. I mean, I'm talking about the movies more. But I guess I understand if you don't want to watch the movies.
I mean, Dark Kiva counts.
Without seeing the series.
So we'd be talking about Glaive?
Yeah, sure. You know, just because that's where the bad ones always turn up. Like, not every series has a bad writer, but every single one of these new movies just seems to have one.
Was G4 a bad guy?
Yeah, but I don't know if I can just say that Dark Kiva is a villain, because there are two guys who are Dark Kiva.
Right.
And, I don't know.
Shh!
It's not spoilers.
It is spoilers!
It's not spoilers.
It is.
They know Dark Kiva exists, that's spoilers enough.
Exactly.
Well, I know Dark Kiva through the context of Decade, which means it's completely different from what it actually is.
Yeah, and let me drop some truth on you, actually. His name isn't really Dark Kiva. As far as I remember, that's not really used in the show. That's just, like, his toy name, like Kamen Rider Shin. He's never actually really called that. Dark Kiva is just Kiva. He's just a different Kiva.
Okay.
Like Agito, like another Agito is just a different Agito, but they had to give him a different name for the toys so they could copyright it separately.
Because I was actually listening to the episode earlier today, and I do want to pick it up. It's just I didn't have time to watch the 6 episodes before you guys recorded.
Okay,
let's just put
it
on record.
12 episodes before you do Q2.
Okay, let's just put it on record. And do not spoil Agito, Ryuki, Fize, Hibiki, Kabuto, Deno, Kiva, and
so
that's about
it. Blade.
I've seen Blade.
Okay, we can spoil it.
Yeah, it's my favorite, remember?
I've seen one episode of Blade.
Do movies count as spoilers? Because, I mean, they have nothing, they're never, like, related to the series.
Well, I saw the Ryuki movie.
Yeah, which is kind of an ending to the series, but not really. It's just an alternate ending.
Yeah, with an alternate ending.
Yeah, so I don't know. Bailey, did the movies count as spoilers?
That's a good question. Let's have a whole episode about that. Okay.
Yeah, because I mean, like, the Fize
movie continuities. How does Kamen Rider work?
The Fize movie is set in another completely different universe. Kabuto might count, I think.
No, it wasn't Kabuto like an alternate history where the meteorite was bigger?
No, Kabuto's movie is the first one that fits totally into continuity. It's a prequel to the series.
Time travel.
Yeah, I hate time travel, but it's a time travel.
It's a closed loop. It's very good.
Yeah.
Oh, does when you clock up, you go 80 miles per hour?
88.
Sorry, I've only seen one and two of one time each.
No,
you're one of the Americans here, aren't you?
Yes, I am, but I haven't even seen Back to the Future 3. What, do I have to denounce my citizenship because of this?
You ain't an Oki anymore.
You aren't allowed in the future.
We have 1 year.
Get away from my barbecue.
Oh, man. Well, it's not like it's that's required viewing for Oklahomans. I think so, Twister right. is, but that's it's kind of annoying, but that's beside the point.
I understand annoying. I do. Okay. Well, movies. I don't want to say to everybody like, "Hey, go and watch all of the Heisei movies," but
don't watch the Blade movie. It sucks.
Yeah, it's another one.
The Jade musical.
I didn't. Well, no. I liked.
It's depressing
in part.
I think that was a big thing around that. I think all of the early Heisei movies set out to be depressing.
Yeah.
Like, on purpose.
I didn't like the evil riders because I thought they were stupid.
Yeah.
And I didn't like the end because I thought it was incredibly cruel.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, actively mean-spirited.
Especially towards Chalice.
That's your main child character. That's
prior
not,
to Hibiki,
not nice.
They're all mean.
And what they did to Chalice, I wasn't happy about that either.
Hey guys, let's do the Decade musical.
Okay.
Stage show.
Okay, right. I've seen that 12 times.
No, he doesn't mean do it. Like, it's covered.
I know what you meant, but let's do it as well.
Yeah.
Water,
no, let's
water,
perform it.
Water, water.
That can be the alternate opening.
Yeah. Okay. Okay, who's playing what? I shall play the Fiddler Crab guy. Shioman King.
Does he have any lines?
I don't know. No, he's the one who hits the Uchan or whatever over the head with the fan. Yeah.
Well, Kuchan is Kuga.
No,
course.
I mean
yeah,
Uchan,
I mean.
The other one.
Ooh, yeah, because he doesn't say E, he says ooh instead of E.
Yeah, what is that? I can say E. What is his problem?
I know, speech impediment.
Yeah, maybe he has a lisp.
Yeah.
And that was just the best way to communicate it through the medium of theater.
I don't think anyone with lisp has problems with E sounds.
He's got an esp.
He's got a lusp.
Except he did say it the one time in the song.
Now. Pick out the plot holes in the musical.
I shall drive
Don't
trucks through them.
Don't go pointing out plot holes in Decade.
Yeah, I'm busy doing that for Guy.
Are there any in Decade?
Plot holes?
Yeah.
Well, there's an absence of plot.
Is there?
The ending.
It's more of a plot void.
Well, the point when they start bringing in Showa stuff, like it does, I think it does lose some of its meaning there.
Yeah, like the 10-faced demon. Remember that?
Yeah, I really didn't like Decade's version of.
Yeah, I prefer Amazon's. I like those faces, like going around saying stuff like "Kill Amazon, destroy Amazon, take the Gigi armlet, and what have you."
Scratches them all off one by one, and then when they fight, pretty cool.
And I wanted to see Amazon rip a monster's head off and see blood jetting out of it.
I just wanted to see the tops of his thighs, like in proper Amazon.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they were wussy with their Amazon, weren't they? He was too clean. Decade Amazon.
Yeah, he wasn't out doing anything. Making medicine and whatnot.
Isn't he, like, actually half Brazilian?
I don't know.
I thought Amazon was just, like, Tarzan.
Yeah, well, that's the funny thing. Amazon's supposed to be Japanese, so like making him half Brazilian is only kind of cool because like it's actually not what the character's supposed to be. I get why they did it, but I don't know if it makes him better.
I thought he had like that same thing that
think
Tarzan
any
and George
cast
the Jungle
feature
had.
Like that should make a character better. I just think it would be a fun detail if it were true.
Oh yeah, sure.
I thought Amazon was just like stranded in the jungle as a baby or something.
He was indeed.
So how is
he? Then he goes back there at the end wearing a suit.
Oh, don't spoil Amazon either.
You can't spoil Showa, come on.
Guys, stop spoiling Gaim, I haven't seen 20.
I think the only Showa series that you can kind of spoil, I would say, Oh, no, actually, in fairness, Super One, Sky Rider, and X kind of do have twists at the end, so that's
interesting.
Super One is super underrated. It's actually one of my favorite Rider series.
I've seen
is Super One, One the space one?
Yeah, the space monk. The Kung Fu space monk. I really like what's revealed about the villains, their motivation, where they come from and stuff. It's pretty cool, pretty surprising.
Yeah, I saw the first two episodes of Super One, and I remember reading his story in the Spirits manga. Yeah, and apparently that made me find out apparently there's some, Japanese folklore about a rabbit on the moon or whatever.
Yep, well, like the man in the moon, they have the rabbit in the moon.
Yeah, well, now that's why, and that's good because I'm watching the Japanese Sailor Moon, and now Usagi's name means something.
Yes. Not Serena.
Serena.
Tsukino Usagi. Yep, you get it.
Usagi, they're all like rabbit.
They're all like that. Mizuno Ami, Hino Rei, they all mean something.
What do
they
mean?
That's like a cool statement. I can't remember all of them, but they do, trust me.
Yeah. I like Rei. Mars is my favorite Senshi.
She's so mean, though.
Yeah, that's what my friend said. And he only watched the English dub, so I don't know.
I think she's meant to be mean. I think that's her strength.
Yeah. I like that she doesn't take anyone's crap.
Pretty much.
It's like, not afraid to point out when someone's being stupid.
She's the one that's going to slap Usagi in the face when she's being cowardly. You know that.
Or stupid.
You know that's coming. You know you're going to get the anime slap where the sparkly tears come off and it all goes slow motion.
Something like that, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Episode 31.
The harrowing finale of Sailor Moon's first season. Oh, man.
Still a few episodes away from that.
Oh, it's something else. The manga
episode
was even 31. Crazy.
2 episodes away from Venus.
All right. The manga is completely different, actually, and especially the finale of the first arc is so dramatic, it's ridiculous.
Mm.
It's so melodramatic, it's like super tear-jerky.
Ooh, tear jerky. That's a...
Yeah. Delicious.
Always.
Is that an Oklahoma special? I'm sorry. I got to stop making fun of Oklahoma.
Oh, that's all right. We prefer... Yeah, that's great. You know, I love kids. They're delicious.
Yeah. I can't make fun of Oklahoma because the only other Oklahoma I know of apart from you would kick my ass, so...
Colton?
Right. Wasn't that a nice episode of Uncommon Cast? Didn't we unlearn something?
Nope.
No. Okay. I enjoyed G a second time round. Was that the first time you'd seen that, Bailey?
Pretty much, yeah.
I actually didn't watch it again before we did this.
What? Good job we weren't recording when you said that.
Wait, you were supposed to stop recording?
Download folder, but again, time constraints because it's like midterms this week.
Alright. Oh,
wait,
well,
we were supposed to stop recording?
Priorities. Huh?
We were supposed to stop recording?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, crap. Okay, what button do I press again?
The square.
The red button.
If you experience any complications, would like to make a testimonial, or have any questions, send your correspondence to uncommoncastlx@gmail.com or contact the Uncommon Crew via Twitter at GomezQ, at Grimhelm, at Lewis Clay, at CommonerVertez, at Musard, at Professor Ware. Keep an eye on at UncommonRx, where one can receive updates, deliver input, and give feedback. Also, visit uncommonrx.tumblr.com for additional content.